You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Radio 91.3. Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Kathy Norton.
And I'm Kelly Worley. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, September 10th, 2014.
We found that in this community, probably 35 to 38% at best is the recycling percentage in this community of Monroe County, of Bloomington. And we're a very progressive community.
Bloomington could see a materials recovery facility by the end of this year. More coming up in today's community report.
Also coming up in the next half hour on a new edition of our Consumer Watchdog segment, Bloomington Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
Hoosiers, along with officials from 31 other states, have rushed to file appeals asking the Supreme Court to consider the issue of same-sex marriage. 15 months ago, in the case of U.S. versus Windsor, the Supreme Court struck down a portion of DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, that denied tax, health, and veterans benefits to legally married same-sex couples. Since that time, the Windsor decision has been used by nearly two dozen judges to strike down same-sex marriage bans in every region of the country. Just last week, the Seventh Court of Appeals in Chicago unanimously ruled that bans against same-sex marriage in Indiana and Wisconsin are unconstitutional. In his 40-page opinion, Judge Richard Posner said that the bans in Indiana and Wisconsin are irrational. He noted that Indiana refuses to recognize same-sex marriages from other states, but it does recognize first-cousin marriages from other states, although first-cousin marriages are not legal in Indiana. The appeals to the Supreme Court come from both sides, states that do allow same-sex marriage and those that don't. According to the Associated Press, 30 businesses, including Amazon, Target, and General Electric, say the Supreme Court should extend same-sex marriage nationwide because, quote, the current patchwork of state laws causes employees justifiable uncertainty about how their employers and state governments will treat their familial relationships, end quote. Many analysts believe the Supreme Court will decide to take up the matter when they meet in private on September 29th. However, it could be June 2015 until a ruling is issued.
IU Bloomington is ranked number 30 for public universities and 76 of the top 100 universities overall, according to the latest survey by U.S. News & World Report. The indicators used to determine rankings include graduation rate, financial resources, faculty resources, student retention, selectivity, reputation, and alumni giving. A high ranking is useful for recruiting out-of-state and foreign students who may not be as familiar with IU as in-state students. Although IU has a sizable number of out-of-state and foreign students, the majority of the students are from Indiana, and most decide to attend IU based on factors other than national rankings. IU officials acknowledge that it's flattering to attain high ratings, but it has little influence on the overall administration of the university.
The Maine Library has extended its Sunday hours in response to public requests. Beginning this month, the library opens from noon to 6 p.m. on Sunday instead of the previous hours of 1 to 5 p.m. To maintain the same total number of hours, the library opens 1 hour later on Friday and Saturday at 10 a.m. instead of 9 a.m. Since downtown parking is free on Sunday, this means that free parking is available during more of the open hours. The increased Sunday hours coincide with the opening of newly renovated auditorium and expanded program offerings on Sunday afternoons, including movies, music, storytelling, and dance.
The Bloomington City Council is on track to give a nearly $750,000 tax break to the owners of a proposed building along the Beeline Trail. The structure between Kirkwood Avenue and 6th Street would have 35 high-end apartments as well as the new headquarters for Cornerstone Information Systems. The city's Economic and Sustainable Development Department has praised the development, and it asked the council to incentivize the project by cutting its property taxes. Denise Alano-Martin is the director of that department.
So this project, we think, provides strong benefits to the community overall, provides strong benefits to the Tax Increment Financing District, and bolsters our efforts not only financially for the Certified Technology Park, but also in terms of a synergy related to all of our technology sector development goals.
The building's owners, D.G. Elmore and Matt Orego, would live in two of the condos. Councilmember Andy Huff questioned giving a tax cut for the businessmen to build what he called, quote, fairly luxurious personal residential units, unquote. He said the council should consider the country's increasing economic inequality as it sets local policy.
I think we need locally, to what little extent we can do anything, we just really need to carefully consider every action we take and how it fits into this larger picture of what's going on in the country. All the ways we might innocently and unknowingly transfer wealth in an upward direction with perfectly good intentions.
Ruff said he generally supports the $14.6 million project, but he put forward an amendment that would have forced the owners to pay property taxes on their own homes. The owners would still have kept the tax break for the businesses and most of the residential space.
These are estimated to be million-dollar units. That was one of the questions I also submitted to staff and got a good answer on. The units are estimated to be $1 million each, those top floor condoized condo units. In this context, I just can't in good conscience, no matter how good I feel about the project, and I recognize the benefits to bring the community, but in this context, I just can't in good conscience support the tax abatement on the personal dwelling units here of relatively high net worth owners.
Few council members supported Ruff's motion. Council President Daryl Neer said he doesn't want to discourage Orego and Elmore from living in their own building.
The implication would be if the owners of the project were to make the decision not to live in their own facility, that would be eligible for full abatement, right? They would be matching the other residential areas that would be up for sale, and so the solution would be to step back, say, I don't want to live there, and there it is. But I think that then that trade-off of living in the units is of value, and specifically of value is that it is a demonstrable commitment to work towards owner occupancy in that building.
Council member Susan Sandberg said she also wanted to encourage owner occupancy. She said many Bloomington residents are understandably wary of new developments downtown.
My biggest fear about any residential project coming forward is that it will not be as successful as the petitioners hope it to be with the owner-occupied aspect of it. That is paramount to my support of this, that this not be another student rental. We have more than enough. We need no more. I hear this every day when I go to the store, when I go to my place of business. People are saying how upset they are with the tone and the tenor of the downtown and the scale that has tipped way too far.
Ruff later rescinded his amendment, and the council voted to pass the tax abatement. The council still has to affirm its decision at a meeting September 17th, and it's possible Ruff could reintroduce his measure then.
Councilmember Dave Rollo addressed a broader issue related to downtown development during council announcements last week. Rollo said the city should consider a temporary moratorium on large-scale buildings there. He said the city's comprehensive plan is 12 years old, and an update would help planners decide what developments to approve.
We're currently in the process of adopting a new comprehensive plan. That's been in the works for the last couple of years. It's called Imagine Bloomington, and it envisions Bloomington at least 20 years hence. So anticipating that we're going to have a new comprehensive plan, including the debate, discussion, adoption of this plan, within the next year, Perhaps we might consider taking a breather. Perhaps we should take a break. That is, consider waiting on future development of a certain scale until we have finished our comprehensive plan.
Like Sandberg, Rollo also cited concerns from his constituents about new structures downtown.
There's no doubt that this development is altering the downtown, and it seems in a way that we're victims of our own successes. Because when I joined the council, the aim was to build up instead of out, instead of building in the periphery of the city, to concentrate in the downtown. And this also had the effect, of course, of keeping the downtown vibrant. But clearly the development is keeping a pace that is unprecedented. And this means lots of investment downtown, lots of public and private investment. That's very good. Is it going too far is the question. A lot of constituents have said this to me.
Rollo said he has not planned any legislation to follow up on his proposal, but he said he wants the council to have a discussion on the issue. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Kelly Worley.
And I'm Kathy Norton. Support for the Daily Local News comes from Smithville, a local provider of internet, phone, and TV service over a stabilized fiber optic network, serving Monroe, Greene, Owen, Lawrence, Brown, and Morgan counties. More information on Smithville's full line of services is available at 812-876-211 or at smithville.net.
After years of deliberation, Monroe County will be sorting and selling its own recyclables, perhaps as soon as December of this year. WFHB correspondent David Murphy visited with Larry Barker, executive director of the Monroe County Solid Waste District, and Steve Volin, president of the District Board of Directors, for today's community report.
The idea is that collecting recyclables isn't the end of the line. In order to be able to sell them for what they're worth, which is more than trash, they need to be baled into a rectangular cube the size of a semi-truck or a rail car. And that's when, that's how they get sold on the open market. And not only are we not getting what that's where you get the full commodity value of a batch of plastic or aluminum or whatever commodity recycling. Over the years, we haven't necessarily been able to guarantee that all of our recycling is getting recycled, let alone that we as a community are getting the market value for those commodities. And the MRF will allow us to not only get the market value for our commodities, but to guarantee that everything that comes to that facility will be recycled.
Okay, and for the last few years that this is being talked about, this concept of doing more to handle the recyclable materials, I think it was originally conceived that there would be a dual stream MRF.
It wasn't original. The original idea 5 years ago now was for the district to build a facility simply big enough to process the recyclables already coming to it. We actually approved that as a board 5 years ago, but the director at the time, Larry Barker, after getting the approval, realized that there would be a greater demand from the community than just what's already coming into the district. And so we started looking at bigger facilities to handle waste from the city of Bloomington, from IU, and so on. It was only the beginning of this year that he brought forward the concept of a dual stream MRF that would handle not only the existing recyclables that we get, but that could also handle the entire waste stream, the stuff that's not separated, where it's just that would take in all trash and effectively be a transfer station, but that would take the vast majority of that content out of the waste stream and make it recyclable, organic waste and the like.
A dual stream MRF is a clear stream, which we are doing now. And the second piece is what is called a waste stream. Legislation was passed this year that has the goal for the state of Indiana to pull 50% of the recyclable material out of the waste stream. David, everybody doesn't recycle. We found that in this community, probably 35 to 38% at best is the recycling percentage in this community of Monroe County, of Bloomington. And we're a very progressive community. So what a dual stream MRF does is has the clean stream for everybody who does curbside, everybody who does our blue bins, all of the other small little community actions like Chad Roeder's down behind the city of Bloomington. That's all clear stream. That part of the recyclables has never actually touched the waste stream, because the homeowners and the citizens of Monroe County have already pulled them out. The dual stream or the waste stream is those residents or municipalities or community members who decide not to recycle. They just put all of it in a trash container and it's picked up as trash. We call that municipal solid waste. The dual stream is a process by which you dump all of that municipal solid waste and it goes through a conveyor process with tumblers and bag breakers and magnetrons and eddy currents and optical readers and air and vacuum, and it actually pulls and sucks out those recyclables that's in that waste stream. Studies have shown that greater than 60% of the waste stream has recyclable content in it. So our goal, as well as the mission of the district, has always been to reduce the waste stream. And the only way we can effectively reduce the waste stream is through a waste stream material recovery facility process. Pull those recyclables out of the waste stream so they don't go to a landfill for final disposal.
So rather than try to advance a one giant facility that would do both streams, we elected instead to try to build such facility in stages. It would all be at the landfill. Each stage doesn't require the other stage to exist. If we build a waste stream later on top of a clean stream facility, that's fine. It can use the same land and the same buildings and most of the same equipment. So the board wasn't ready to decide on going ahead with a waste stream MRF, but they were ready to decide to except the clean stream MRF that was approved last month. Hopefully we can have it built by the end of the year. So, and then the waste stream would be a separate challenge to design, approve, and build.
It's anticipated that the cost of operating the facility and the capital investment and such would be offset by the amount of money that the district gets back by selling.
Yes, we anticipate that the existence of the clean stream MRF alone will reduce our expenses by, I think it's about $100,000 a year. So that's a win, you know.
How would it affect the current contract with Hoosier Disposal?
They're not related. We're already separating recycling from municipal solid waste. This is only for recyclables that we are already collecting here at this site and at our four rural sites. Our legal counsel has determined that the contract we have with Hoosier Disposal Republic Services would not in any way be affected by our construction of this facility. If we were to build a waste stream portion of a MRF, a waste stream function, that is described in the contract, and that would affect the contract. But we're not there yet.
When do you expect this operation to be up and running?
The capital cost associated with this is around $255,000, I believe. That's already part of the 2015 budget. However, the Solid Waste Board can go in and request that we go ahead with a special appropriation, which is ask for more money that's already in our budget, okay?
The dollars we would spend on January 1st that have already been approved through due process are the same dollars that we would spend now if we spent them 3 months early. We're going to be asking the board to approve those dollars now rather than in January. There's no reason to wait.
So if it's approved, when should it be up and running?
About 120 days after the approval, in other words, after County Council approves the additional appropriation of the dollars into the 2014 budget, about 120 days is all it's going to take us to have it up and operational.
Okay.
Thank you, David.
That was correspondent David Murphy speaking with Larry Barker and Steve Volan concerning the upcoming development of a materials recovery facility in Monroe County.
Support for WFHB comes from Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery since 1976. Blooming Foods features natural, organic, local, and fair trade food and garden items with support for small farmers, co-op producers, and local food artisans. Blooming Foods Market and Deli on 2nd and Fess at Elm Heights, on East 3rd near College Mall, West 6th near the Courthouse Square, and right up your alley at Kirkwood and Dunn.
Coming up next, our weekly Consumer Watchdog segment, Bloomington Beware.
Welcome to a brand new edition of Bloomington Beware, WFHB's weekly consumer watchdog, with current advisories and hints designed to help keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket. Scientists recently announced that the universe actually expanded faster than the speed of light during the first few trillionths of a second after the Big Bang. The only known phenomenon to exceed that rate of growth is the increase in the number of scams and swindles since the creation of the Internet. It's no joke. It's not even a very good wisecrack. Just do a quick search online for latest scams or something like that, and you'll be inundated with results, kind of like taking a shower under Niagara Falls. Here's some of the latest and not-so-greatest swindles we turned up. News stories turn into new scams faster than neutrinos zipping through the center of the Earth. Did you see the recent story about the massive phone hack that resulted in nude photos of over 100 A-list celebrities being posted online? The so-called Celebgate story is true. We can both be glad I'm not famous. And in the blink of an eye, spam emails and social media posts started appearing with headlines like, OMG, Jennifer Lawrence leaked photos, and a link to click. Anyone dumb enough to fall for it gets taken to a website to download a special app to view the photos. Click here. And, of course, if your gonads have trumped your brain and you do it, the special app turns out to be a nasty virus. OMG indeed. Fake reports of shocking events connected with famous people aren't just in English, either. There's an email circulating in Español saying that Colombian singing star Shakira has been killed in a car accident and providing a link to click para obtener más información. Of course, instead of información, you get a virus de computadora. Don't be estúpido. Facebook is becoming a happy hunting ground for faceless predators. One recent post says you can get a $1,000 gift card from Kmart just by clicking a link, and some poor suckers have done it, even though it's kind of hard to imagine spending $1,000 at Kmart. And there's a unique-to-social-media scam that's trolling for likes instead of money. A post says you'll be entered to win a free Harley-Davidson motorcycle if you'll just like this page, share it on your own page, and, oh yes, tell us whether you'd like a red bike or a black one. Like farming seeks to rack up lots of likes on a page because then it can be used as a vehicle for survey scams and other frauds, or to aggressively market some product or service, or even sold on the internet black market to other scammers. Emails thanking you for your order have been so successful they're multiplying faster than a quantum computer. They may appear to come from a company you do business with or one you don't. They have all kinds of details, including an order number and transaction number, the date, the amount, everything but what was ordered. But there is an attached file that has all the information. And if you're listening to this broadcast, you know what happens if you're silly enough to try and open it. Even on your smartphone, you can get a message that looks just like it comes from WhatsApp, a cross-platform messaging service, saying, "You have a new voicemail." Clicking on play will let the scammers play havoc with your phone, installing malware or racking up huge charges. The internet is a virtual jungle, but you have a virtual machete to cut your way through. It's called the delete key. Bloomington Beware is produced in cooperation with the Central Indiana Better Business Bureau. The phone number for the Indianapolis office is 317-488-2222. Or you can reach them online at indybbb.org. For WFHB News and Public Affairs, I'm Richard Fish, reminding you that swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB, supported by Smithville, your Indiana communications company at smithville.net, and by Blooming Foods Market and Deli, your locally grown co-op grocery. Today's headlines were written by Susan Northleaf, along with Joe Crawford for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Bloomington Beware was produced by Richard Fish. Our feature was produced by Allison Bechtesh with correspondent David Murphy.
Our engineers are Jim Lang and Adam Reichley. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Managing producer is Joe Crawford. Executive producer is Allison Bechtesh. For WFHB, this is Kelly Worley.
And I'm Kathy Norton. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized among the best newscasts and breaking news coverage in 2013 by the Indiana Professional Chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. Stay tuned for the Brown County Hour, coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.